So we haven't had a share for a little while, as we know. So one second, sure. Okay, so ooh, I don't know if it's blocked on yours also. I don't know, can you see it or no? Oh no. Let's see how we can do this. I am not sure how to do it where you can see everything. On mine, it's a little bit blocked. I don't know if it's also blocked on yours. Okay. No, you can see the whole thing? I
Yeah,
hope.
yeah.
Oh, good. Okay, very good. So it's all right, I'll manage. Okay, so what we are doing now is we are going to, hopefully today, and we've taken quite a long time on this story, and it's a very fascinating story in the Chumash with the Chet HaEgel, and we're continuing today. Today we are in Perek Lamed Beis, chapter 32, and we will start. We have done Pasuk Lamed and Lamed Aleph, verse 30 and verse 31, but we're just going to quickly recap them, and then we're going to finish the Perek today. Hopefully, we might have a few small things to that we won't manage to finish, but basically, we should be finishing the chapter today and continuing next week with the next chapter, and then we'll decide where we're going to move on to. But for today, as we haven't had a shear for a while, so quickly to recap, we know that the Jewish people have done the terrible sin. Moshe Rabbeinu came down from the mountain, he broke the luchos, he gave those people to drink that, he ground up the actual egel and they drank it and some of them died. Then we already had where some of the tribe of Levi killed 3,000 men amongst the Jewish people who had actually done the sin. With witnesses, with the warning, they were killed by the tribe of Levi. And now we have where Moshe Rabbeinu, there is still, we have not yet accomplished a complete atonement. Hashem hasn't said, I have forgiven you totally. All that Moshe has done is sort of stalled a little bit, and if you want to say, calmed Hashem's anger a little bit. And now we can see that what Moshe Rabbeinu is going to be doing is get jolting the Jewish people to do a proper tshuva, as well as going back up to Hashem to attain real atonement. And that's what happens in our psukim, where Moshe Rabbeinu is about to leave from the Jewish people and go back up on the mountain. And just before he does, that's what Pasuk Lamed is. So Pasuk Lamed is starts Vayihi Mimacharas, and it was on the next day. The next day, the next morning. What? The next morning of what? The next morning after the tribe of Levi had killed 3,000 men, and the Egel is totally burned, right? It's gone, so to speak. It's been destroyed. The Jewish people obviously feel very, in a way, afraid and I imagine, and we can all imagine how sorry they feel for what they've done, and they're afraid for their future. They don't know what the future holds. And interesting how the pasuk starts, Vayihi. So the word we know, Vayihi, always heralds something not so positive. And why is that? Because interesting, the Mefarshim tell us that a very fascinating thing happens. The Medrash describes that when Moshe, actually, I think the Alshich actually says that when Moshe Rabbeinu woke up in the morning, he was hoping after Shevet Levi had killed the 3,000 men, he was hoping that things would look much better. The world would be a much brighter place. He would feel, in a sense, the love of Hashem, back, so to speak, restored. And yet it was still vai. It was still like, oy vey. It's a mourning, but it's not really a fresh mourning. It's carried forth what happened yesterday, and it's still heavy and still negative. So Moshe felt still, obviously, this very big load of what is he going to do today? How's he going to change everything? And that's why it starts, Vayihi Mimacharas. It's like, Vay Macharas, Oy Vey. It's tomorrow, but Oy Vey, it's still Oy Vey. So what does Moshe Rabbeinu do? Vayomer Moshe El Ha'am. So Moshe says to the people, Atem, Chatasem chata gedoyla, you have sinned a very great sin. Va'ata, and now Elel Hashem, I will go back up to Hashem. Ulay achapra ba'at chataschem, maybe I will be able to attain atonement for your sin. Right? So we did do this pasuk, but just very quickly, just to recap what Rashi says. What does this mean? Achapra ba'at chataschem. So he says, Asim Kaifer Vikinuach Ustima Leneget Chataschem Lahavdil Beinechem Ubein Hachet. What is Moshe Rabbeinu hoping? He says, I will place a cleansing, a wiping away, a barrier opposite your sin to separate you from your sin. So you see how this flows, because he woke up in the morning and he sees that the sin is still there, so to speak. It's still hovering so greatly over them. And Moshe says, we have to do much more. And he's jolting himself and the people. We have to do much more to get rid of this separation, this barrier that's still standing between you and Hashem. Okay. Just very quickly, I'll just read. I'm sorry, I don't have it inside, but I'll just read you as slowly as I can and translate. But I guess you can, some of you I can see. You can raise your hand, or I don't know, I don't see the chat, so I don't know if I'll see if you ask a question, but you can unmute yourself if it's not clear. Okay, so it says, Atem chataschem. So the Svarnu says, De'u goydel chataschem. What's Moshe Rabbeinu doing here when he's saying, and now you have sinned such a terrible sin? He's actually trying really to hammer it into them and to tell them, acknowledge, not only know, not only be aware, but truly acknowledge and own your sin. Ki amnam b'yidi asay tiye tshuva b'li safik. Because when somebody truly acknowledges what they've done wrong, that's when they can actually do tshuva. The first step for tshuva, as we all know, is to acknowledge that we've made a mistake. If a person is excusing themselves in their mind and justifying themselves, there's no tshuva process happening. So that's why Moshe is telling them again, you have sinned, accept it, acknowledge it. And that's the first step towards your tshuva. As he says, Kip Shaya Neida, like the pasuk tells us that you know your sin, and then once you know your sin, you can move on to start doing tshuva. So that's what the Svarnu explains. Let's go on to the next pasuk, because I know we've done this pasuk before. But pasuk Lamed Aleph tells us, V'yoshav Moshe El Hashem. Now, this is like the last words he says to the Jewish people. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu is takeh, going back up on the mountain. And we know, we said this is the second set of 40 days. The first set and the third set are considered Yemei Ratzain, days of goodwill. The first set is when Moshe was getting the first Luchais. The second set is when Moshe is getting the second Luchais. But the middle set, which is actually the time that we are in now in the calendar, to Lashkacha Pratis, right? This is from Yud Zayin, from Yud Ches, actually, in Tammuz until Rosh Chodesh Elul, and it's exactly where we are now. These are the days that are actually quite difficult days. These are the days where Moshe Rabbeinu is doing all of this pleading that we will read in these psukim. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, I'm going back up to Hashem. And what does he say to Hashem? Vayomer. And he says, Ona chata ha'am hazeh chata gedayla. It's interesting because he's almost repeating what he told the Jewish people, and he's highlighting, and it's quite scary, the sound of it, and it's a little bit of a puzzle, and we did a little bit explain, but we'll explain a little bit deeper today. It's like he starts off his pleading for the Jewish people with saying, the Jewish people did a terrible sin. It's like, is that what he has to rub it in again? But anyways, and then he says, what is the terrible sin that they did? Vayasu lahem elekei zahav, they've made a god of gold. Now, I know we did the Rashi, but I'll just quickly do it again because it's going to flow on to the next few mefarshim. What was Moshe Rabbeinu highlighting when he says, first of all, he says that they committed a grave sin. And then he says, you know what sin it is? They made themselves a god of gold. Why does Moshe sort of rub in and be so explicit about their sin and, you know, describe it exactly? So Rashi says this was part of the way that he was trying to get atonement for the Jewish people, to mitigate, to make it a little bit less. It's not something that we try to do, but Moshe, being Moshe, can do this. He's almost, as we know, putting the blame a little bit on Hashem himself. And he says to Hashem, Rashi tells us, Atahu shegaramta lahem, you are the one who caused them to sin. Why? Shehashbatz lahem zahav v'chol cheftzam. Because you gave them so much gold and everything that their heart desired. Mayasu shalayechtu. What choice did they have except for to sin? You made it almost impossible for them. He says, and we did this last time, but the mashal that's given is mashal amelech shahayamachil umashke esbnoi. A king who had a prince, and he gave him to eat, and he gave him to drink. In other words, he spoiled him rotten. Ooh, mikashtoi, and he dressed him beautifully. Ooh, v'toyle like kispitzavare, and he gives him as much money as he wants. Right, this, you know, this credit card, so to speak. He has the money of the wallet on his hanging on his neck. And he puts him in a place where there's every opportunity to do sin. Every temptation is there. What do you expect from this child, from this prince? Of course he's going to sin. So that's what Moshe Rabbeinu says to Hashem. You gave them everything. And you gave them every opportunity almost to sin. What do you want from your people? So it's an interesting way that Rashi is explaining Moshe Rabbeinu's words, how he's starting immediately to approach Hashem and say, please, please forgive them. It's not entirely their fault. But let's go a few. I'm just going to read a few of the other Mefarshim. I wish I knew how I have. Let me just see if I know how. I'm just going to try one thing. Just one second. Let's see, it says here, Nusher. Let me see. If I, no, not that one. I thought I have it. I guess I don't. No. Okay, sorry. Let me see if I have it here. No. Okay, sorry. No. I won't do it because I don't know how to get it now. Okay. I'll just put back the psukim and leave it at that. Okay, sorry, I'll just have to read you. I'm sorry, I thought I would be able to show you inside, but I don't know how to get the other screen up. Okay, so I just wanted to show you just a few more of the Mefarshim, how they explain this, the Moshe Rabbeinu, so to speak, his approach, how he's speaking to Hashem here. So the Kli Yakar tells us something very interesting. The Kli Yakar says like this, the words of the Pasuk are very exact. Moshe Rabbeinu, when he says to Hashem, Ona, Chata ha'am hazeh, chata gedayla. Right? So first he says, this nation has done a very great sin. And then he specifies, Vayasu lahem alekei zahav. What is this idea? So he says that the chata gedayla is alluding to, it's a hint to two terrible types of sin. Which two sins? And we said in other commentaries seem to imply that not only did the Jewish people do the sin of Avodah Zarah, which is the Egel, but they also did the terrible sin of Shvichas Damim, which is murder by killing Chor, as well as Giloy Arayis, immorality. That was all happening. That was hinted to in the word Mitzachek, that they were celebrating there in a very frivolous way, in a very immoral way. Some Mefarshim say, not all Mefarshim agree that they, and some Mefarshim say only a very small number of them, but the Kli Yakar has a very interesting explanation, and he says that even though there is this suspicion, so to speak, hovering over the Jewish people that they committed three terrible sins, Moshe Rabbeinu says to Hashem, no. They didn't commit three terrible sins. They really only committed one. Where do the other two come into the picture? So we know that by the Aseres Hadibreis, when Hashem gave at Matan Torah, he gave the Ten Commandments, Aseres Hadibreis, he gave them on Luchais, and the way he set up the Luchais were five on one side and five on the other. The first five correspond to the second five. They're right across from each other. So the first one, which says, Anoichi Hashem Alikecha, which obviously means we should only have one God, what's on the other side of the Aseres Hadibres over there? It's not to kill, right? Loi Sirtzach, that's number six. So that's right across from Anoichi, not to murder. And what's right across from lo yiyeh lecha, that you shouldn't have any other gods, lo sinaf, that you shouldn't commit adultery. So in many cases it says that when a person does, whether they do idol worship or not acknowledging one god, it is equal as if they have committed murder and adultery. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, this chata gedoyla that he's highlighting, and actually it's very exact, the words, he says, you know, people have suspicions that they did these terrible sins, but they didn't do those terrible sins. They only did Avodah Zarah. But because they did Avodah Zarah, the other sins sort of come into it as well. And he says, how do we know that the other sins, the sin of murder and the sin of immorality, are called Gedoyla? So the Kli Yakar actually brings two psukim. We have two stories. Right at the beginning of Chumash, who was the first one that committed murder? We know it was Cain when he killed Hevel. And what does he say? How does he describe his sin? The Pasuk says, he said about himself, I forgot the words, it says that my sin is too great, too big. let me just see, I'll find the words. He says that Gadol avayni mi nesaya. My sin is gadol. My sin is too great for me to bear. So there we see that murder is called a great sin. Where do we see that adultery is a great sin? So we know from the story of Yosef. What does Yosef say to the wife of Potiphar? He says to her, "Ve'eich ese hara hagidoyla hazais. How will I do this very big bad thing," so to speak. So there we see adultery is called chata gedoyla. So Moshe Rabbeinu here says, people have suspicion. And they say that the Jewish people did three terrible sins. Ona chata ha'amaze chata gedoyla. So the Kliyakar says, read it. Has the Jewish people actually sinned those terrible sins? No, they only did one. They did the God of gold, only the Avodah Zarah, not the other two. Don't have the suspicion. And if you do have the suspicion, it's only very few of them that actually did those other sins. So you see how the Kliyakar is explaining, he's mitigating it. He's making it a lot less, not a lot more. That's how the Kliyakar, so to speak, explains the words of Moshe. So as he says, Kavanas Moshe Hoysa Lahaktin, to actually minimize Avin HaEgel, that Hashem wants to destroy them for. And therefore they shouldn't be destroyed, only punish the ones that actually did the sin perhaps, or the ones that, the few that actually committed the sin. Then the Arachayim tells us also something very beautiful. And I know we touched upon this, but I just want to read you again, because I know we did this in a rush last time. The Arachayim says, what's Moshe Rabbeinu, so to speak, defense? And this is actually a beautiful defense, because this defense is something that we all use all the time, and we will use after 120 when we come to the Beis Din Shel Maila, and Hashem says, how could you have done such and such and such and such? And we're standing in court. And what's one of the methods that many good lawyers use, even unfortunately they misuse it sometimes, when people have done a terrible thing? You find that one of the best defenses that they use is, I think, I don't know the legal jargon, but I think it's called the plea of insanity, right? They say the person wasn't in his right mind when they did this terrible thing. And for some reason, many times it carries weight and the person actually gets away with it. They get away with whatever they've done. Insanity, they plead. So the Arachayim says like this. I want to just read you a few of the words from the Arachayim. He says that Ein Adam Oiver Aveira Ela Imke Nichnas Bay Ruach Shtus. The famous line that we have, that how can a person possibly sin? Because we never want to be separate from Hashem. And if we just acknowledge the fact that every time, whether it's a small sin or a big sin, we are severing to a certain extent our connection to Hashem, anybody in their right mind wouldn't do that. So therefore, what causes us to sin? When a ruach shtus enters our self, so to speak, a spirit of folly, an insanity, a moment of insanity. A moment where we are not thinking rationally. So therefore he says, Vizehu chisaron ha-nefesh. This is a lack in the soul. And that's why it's called chet. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu highlights, he says, chata gedayla. What is chata gedayla? Chet, and we know, is from the lashon of chisaron, a lack. That's what chet comes from, which means that there was a hole, there was an emptiness. The Jewish people had a very big emptiness in their mind or in their spirit. And that's what caused them to sin. They sort of became irrational for that moment. And therefore he says, and what happened was, what was actually missing? Nechsar meha'ares nafshai. The light of the soul was missing. All of a sudden, they didn't feel their connection in a revealed way. And that's what caused them to feel disconnected, which caused them to feel, if you want to say, this moment of folly. And that causes them to sin. And he says a beautiful thing. He says, "V'zehu echad mitaynas shabahem yiske ha'adam liyayim hadin." And actually, we're going to use this when we go up and when Hashem says, how could you have done such and such and such? Well, we'll say, because we did a chait. Why did we do a chait? Because we felt a moment of lack. We didn't feel connected for a moment. The light, your light, wasn't shining so strongly. And therefore, we were entered into a state of irrationality, and that caused us to feel disconnected, and the disconnect caused us to feel even more disconnected. In other words, we acted on it and we did whatever it is that we did. So it's interesting that Moshe Rabbeinu uses this claim and it pulls, it actually works. He says, like, interesting things. He says, right, his mind wasn't complete when he did his sin. So even though he still might be punished, because the bottom line is you did the mistake, right? You can't always plead insanity and say, I have no responsibility. But still, it will minimize it. It will still make it that Hashem will say, okay, you really didn't mean it 100%. You weren't 100% in your right mind, only 50%. So I can't hold you fully responsible. And that will definitely lessen the punishment. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu uses there. And that's what we use. Although we shouldn't think of that when we're doing the sin. We should only, when we're looking back, obviously. And the idea, and as we're taught in many places, what's the best insurance for us not to have that moment of insanity is to truly keep up that feeling of connectedness. So we have to constantly inspire ourselves, keep on learning, because if we don't, then we will have that blockage. That's what happens. So we have to, just like we always say, just like we have to eat every day, you know, you can't say I ate yesterday, so today I don't have to eat. Halavai, we can say that, but we don't. In the same way, we can't say I learned yesterday, so today I don't have to learn. Every day we have to re-inspire ourselves. And that's the only way that we retain that connection. And that's the only way that we will not sin. But here Moshe Rabbeinu uses this to mitigate the punishment. Okay, let's go now to the next pasuk. Now, as I know we did this pasuk last time, we did a little bit about it and we said we're going to develop it more. This is one of the most famous pasukim in the Chumash. Moshe Rabbeinu continues with his pleading to Hashem and the powerful pleading that he uses. And now, if you will forgive their sin. He doesn't finish the sentence. Interesting. It's a very disjointed pasuk. He just says, if you will forgive their sin. And then he goes on and he says, if not, erase me from your book, which you have written, im ayin, right? If you don't, then erase me from your book. So he doesn't say what to do if yes. Interesting. Funny. He doesn't say forgive. It's a funny pasuk. So let's see what Rashi says. Rashi says it's just missing. Sometimes pasukim are missing, and we understand what Moshe Rabbeinu means. So I'll read you. Rashi says like this. Hare toif, right? If you forgive them, then good. Hare toif. Ani aymer lecha mecheni, right? Then fine, fantastic. Aini, then don't erase me. It's all good, wonderful. But if you don't forgive them, as he says, v'ze mikra kotzer, it's a abbreviated pasuk. It's missing a little bit. And Rashi says sometimes we have that for chen harbe. It happens in the Chumash and other places. Misifrecha, what is misifrecha? What is Moshe Rabbeinu asking to be erased from? So this is the most famous one. That's why we know this one. But there are other opinions we'll see in a minute. So here Rashi says, kol hatayra kula. Moshe Rabbeinu says, you don't forgive them, erase me from your entire Torah. Shalai yaimru alai, so that it should not be said on me. Shalai hayisi kidai levake shalayim rachamim, that I was unworthy to beg mercy for them. In other words, that I didn't do enough to plead for the Jewish people. That's how we explain, Rashi says that's what this pasuk means. One of the most powerful pasukim, because we know, as we said, Moshe Rabbeinu and the Torah really are one thing. I mean, to Moshe Rabbeinu, the Torah is so dear, so precious, he understands the value. And to have himself erased for who, as we said, for a people who have done such a terrible sin. Okay, but let's develop this a little bit more. So I'm really sorry that I don't have it inside, but I'll just share with you what some of the Mefarshim say, explain. So the Ramban says very magnificently. He explains something very powerful, and some of the other Mefarshim develop a little bit more based on the Ramban. I'll just show you. He says like this. Ulefi dati, according to my opinion, ki Moshe Amar, Moshe says, v'ata im tisa chatosam, if you carry, so to speak, if you forgive their sin, birachamecha, with your compassion, that's fantastic. Vim ayin, and if not, mecheini na tachtam, erase me from before them, from where? Which sefer? Mi sefer hachayim. Not from the Torah, We know on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, we allude to it many times, there are three books in Shamayim, right? There's the book of Tzaddikim, the book of the Beinanim, the book of the Rishayim, and we know what is the book of the Tzaddikim called? Sefer HaChayim. We all ask, right? That's what we ask a whole day Rosh Hashanah. We say, Hashem, you should put us in, inscribe us in the book of life, B'Sefer HaChayim. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, if you don't forgive the Jewish people, erase me from the book of life. The Espel Ani Ansham. I will bear their sin. In other words, let me die instead of them. Very powerful language, very incredible thought that Moshe has. As he says, because, and there's a pasuk in Yeshayahu that the Ramban quotes, that Moshe Rabbeinu was the one that carried the sin for the Jewish people, and because of him, Hashem provided atonement. And that's Moshe Rabbeinu, so that, and the next pasuk, Hashem actually replies, and he says, Hachayte emcha misifri, I'm only going to erase the one who sinned from my sefer, not you. You don't deserve to be erased from the book of life. But it's a very powerful thing that we see very clearly how Moshe Rabbeinu is putting his life on the line for who? For the Jewish people. I want to just show you the Rabbeinu Bachai, how he says. So he explains also, very similar. He says, what is this sefer? So according to the Rashi, it was the Torah. According to the Ramban, it's the Sefer HaChaim, right? That Hashem has up there in front of him, this book of life where he writes down. According to Rabbeinu Bachai, which is very similar to the Ramban, we have this concept that there's something called Ma'areches HaKeichavim. We refer to it like the constellations. But it's our destiny, the book of our destiny, if you want to say. The word book is really used in a sense very liberally. It's the idea of the fact that every person has something that's going to unfold in their life, and we can call it a book, or we can call it the constellations, the mazel, whatever you want. And he says, and these are the books of Hashem, so to speak. And just, he says like this, so the Rabbeinu Bachai says that what Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, Moshe Rabbeinu says, so Moshe Rabbeinu says, actually, with he's begging Hashem, Me'ita Yisbarach from Hashem, She'im lo yisa lepisham, if he will not carry, if he will not forgive them for their sin, She'imche koichai mimareches hakoichavim, he should erase his strength from the stars of the heaven. In other words, almost blot out his mazel, so to speak. Make it that he doesn't have a good destiny ahead of him, which inevitably means that he will die soon. Why? And a very beautiful language the Rabbeinu Bachai used, Kleimar, Shiyargeyu, that he should kill him. Kila yuchau lirai spira asam. It's almost like a parent who, as we know, would rather suffer themselves than see their child suffer. Moshe Rabbeinu says, I cannot bear to see if you will annihilate the Jewish people. If you think of doing that, just kill me first. Destroy me. I cannot see the suffering of the Jewish people. So again, you see incredible the love of Moshe Rabbeinu for the Jewish people coming through very, very strongly. Now, the Kli Yakar also says, he says a very interesting thing, that Moshe Moser Nafshei, right? So he's obviously, he's putting his own life on the line for the Jewish people. Al Kain Amar, that's why he says, Im Tisach HaTasam V'mayin, right? If you forgive them, good. If not, not. Then forget it. Then erase me. Why? Because he says, Im Tisach HaTasam V'tikach Oisi Kapara Ba'adam Mecheni. If you're going to forgive them and you're going to take me instead as a kapara, fine, just erase me, that's fine. V'im loy tisa as I gam kein mecheni. And if you don't forgive them, for sure erase me. So actually, that's how the Kli Yakar says why the pasuk is abbreviated, because it's not abbreviated. Maisha's almost, to Maisha Rabbeinu, it's like, I don't have a choice. Either you take me instead of them, that's fine, and erase me, or if you don't want to take me instead of them and you don't want to forgive them, for sure erase me. So erase me either way. That's fine. I'll take the yoke of their sin. Or if you're not going to accept my yoke, like in other words, if you're not going to accept me instead of them, well, I for sure don't want to live. So again, you see the powerful love that Moshe Rabbeinu has for the Jewish people. Just want to see, okay, this is also a continuation of the Kli Yakar. So the Kli Yakar develops it a little bit more. And he says, what was Moshe Rabbeinu's logic? Because Moshe Rabbeinu, and this will develop, is a very beautiful idea. Moshe Rabbeinu actually says that I am really, and he knows, he's like the neshama klolis, right? He's like the general neshama, and he's like the root, if you want to say. And the Jewish people are like the branches that come off the root. Come off the, if you want to say, the roots of the tree, or even the main bark, the main, you know, the main part of the tree. So Moshe Rabbeinu says an interesting thing. He says that if the branches are rotten, so if the branches have done something wrong, then whose fault is it? It's obviously the roots, right? Maybe I didn't give enough moisture to them, right? I wasn't healthy enough, and therefore my branches are breaking. And therefore, if that's the case, well, then I deserve even more than them to be punished. So Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, no, 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 it doesn't work like that. Sometimes the branches can be faulty, but the roots are still okay. It's not the root's fault, so to speak. It's just some blockage in between. And that's why Hashem says, no, I'm only going to destroy the ones who actually sinned. It's not going to be you. But still, you see how Moshe feels such a tremendous responsibility in a sense. He takes almost upon himself that it's his fault if there is a lack in the Jewish people. Okay, I just want to see. Oh, and one more thing that the Kliokar says, another suggestion. What does this mean, erase me? So he says, it doesn't mean erase me. What Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, mecheni, erase, is a different thing. Moshe Rabbeinu says to Hashem, you know, before Moshe Rabbeinu came down from the mountain, when Hashem first told Moshe that the Jewish people had sinned, right, what did he say to him? I will get rid of this people, and I will make you into a great nation, right? He said to Moshe Rabbeinu, don't worry about it, we'll just get rid of them, and you'll start a new nation, and everything will be wonderful. So here Moshe Rabbeinu is responding to that, and he says to Hashem, you remember those words you told me, that I will make you into a great nation? Forget those words. Erase them. They shouldn't have any weight. They should have nothing. I don't even consider that. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu says to Hashem. He says, those words, Ve'esa ischa l'goy gadol, forget about them. He says, if you don't want to forgive them, then erase those words and erase me. If you forgive them, for sure erase those words. Because obviously, it's not just going to be me, it's going to be the Jewish people. So that's how the Kliokar explains. Also, erase that suggestion, it should never come up again. And it's interesting because part of it also for Moshe Rabbeinu is not just for himself, but it's for all future generations. Moshe here is pleading on behalf of the Jewish people, and he's really saying to Hashem that whatever the Jewish people do, now and in the future, please be ready to forgive them. And never ever consider getting rid of the majority of the Jewish people and saving just one or two. That's not an idea. That's not a proposition. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu says to Hashem. Now, the Emek Davar, the Nitziv, he says a very beautiful thing. He says he actually just develops a drop more of what the Ramban says, how Moshe Rabbeinu was ready to put himself, so to speak, on the line. And he says like this, that what was Moshe Rabbeinu had a bit of logic also behind it. He says that many times, let's say somebody borrows money from a grocery store and keeps going in and buying on credit and buying on credit and buying on credit. Well, at the beginning, you know, the first few days and the first few, you know, dollars, it's fine. The grocer man is happy to look away and say, okay, you owe me a little bit, that's fine. I'm sure tomorrow you'll pay. But after a while, when the debt starts to accumulate and it becomes a very big debt, well, the grocer is going to say, sorry, you owe it to me now. I can't forgive you for your debt anymore. It's just too big already. So the same thing he says, that there are certain averes that really carry tremendous weight. They're expensive, so to speak. They're a very big debt. And especially chilul Hashem, right? Causing a desecration of Hashem's name. So here with the Chet HaEgel, according to many opinions, what seems to have happened is that the Jewish people have caused a terrible chilul Hashem. So therefore, what Moshe Rabbeinu says is, he says, De'af al gab, she'avayn chilul Hashem, ein shay chamor, that even though this sin of chilul Hashem is a very big sin, and therefore it's a lot of points, so to speak, against them, right? Which means that there's almost no compassion left. There's nothing left to, so to speak, if you want to say, to delay their destruction. So therefore, what does Moshe Rabbeinu says? Mikol makom ein ze ela b'tziruf shar avinos. The only reason why they've, so to speak, reached their credit limit is if you do it together with other sins that they have already done. Achu shkula umachras, until it literally overweighs, so to speak. It's like too big the debt. Masha ein kein im haschuyos merubim. But what happens if somebody has a lot of debt, right? You know, let's say if you borrow from the bank, but you also have a lot of, got the word, but you have a lot of credit, right? The bank sees that your house is worth a lot. So they might overlook your debt because they say, well, look, you have a lot of credit, so to speak. You have a lot of money that you have that perhaps we can, yes, so to speak, bank on. And therefore, the bank will not tell you that you have to get out of your house. Let's say, over here, Moshe Rabbeinu says, I have a brilliant idea. The problem with the Jewish people at the moment is that their debt is so great and they have no equity. They own nothing, right? Sounds like it. I have a good idea. Take everything from my bank account, all my credits, and put it into the Jewish people. Well, then I'm going to be at zero, obviously. Then I'm going to be ayin. I'm going to be nothing. I'm going to be worthless, and perhaps I have to die, but that's okay. But once you transfer all of my credits and you put it on the account of the Jewish people, well, then you cancel out their sin. Then they don't deserve to die anymore. This is Moshe Rabbeinu's logic, a very beautiful idea. Again, how Moshe Rabbeinu is, it's incredibly powerful, what Moshe Rabbeinu is willing to do and how he talks to Hashem and how he gets this whole thing through in order to hopefully attain forgiveness. We will come back to this pasuk at the end, but I just want to continue to read the pasukim and do the mefarshim inside, and then we'll come back. I'll drop more of insight if hopefully we'll have time. So let's go now to pasuk lamed beis. In pasuk lamed beis, we see how Hashem responds to Moshe, and Hashem says to Moshe, "Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, Mi asher chatali emchenu misifri, the one who has sinned to me, that's the one I will erase from my book. It's not going to be you who hasn't sinned. No, you can't go instead of them. It doesn't work like that. Rather, the ones who have sinned, they're the ones who I'm going to take." And whom does he mean? Oy, the Medrash says, this is a very scary thought. The Medrash says, when Hashem says, "Me, Asher Chatali, the one who sinned to me," who is that? That is specifically talking about Aaron. Aaron, who is the one, as we know, unfortunately, in a certain sense, helped the Jewish people. So perhaps Hashem is alluding to Aaron, that he is the one. And then what happens is, because he didn't daven enough and he didn't plead enough with the Jewish people, we're sorry not to do it. So therefore, because of that, Hashem says Aaron is responsible, and therefore what happens is when Moshe hears this, Moshe starts to plead very strongly on behalf of Aaron. And he begs Hashem, no, Aaron has nothing to do with it. Please don't hold him responsible. But that's one of the commentaries that says that it was Moshe. Hashem says, I'm going to hold the one who is responsible, not you. And then Hashem continues, and this is actually very sad, but Hashem continues and he says, okay, all very nice and good. You're right. You can see in this pasuk, Hashem says, I'm not going to destroy the Jewish people, right? I'm not going to destroy all of them. I'm only going to hold the ones who are actually responsible. But now Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, when you go back down from the mountain, I want you to continue what you were supposed to be doing. And what was that? In pasuk lamed daled, va'ata leich nechei, Es ha'am el asher dibarti lecha. Hine malachi yelech lefanecha, ubiyoyim pakti upakadati aleim chatosam. And now Hashem says to Moshe, go, lead the people to the place where I have spoken. In other words, take them where they're supposed to go, to the land of Israel. That's where they're supposed to go. Behold, my angel will go before you. But on the day I make an accounting of their sins, I will bring their sin to account against them. This is a hard pasuk to understand, but what we can see very clearly is something quite, it's not said as a punishment, but it's direct consequence, and it's actually very sad. And we'll see that Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't pick up on it here, but he will pick up on it later. Hashem says to Moshe that he should lead the Jewish people into the land of Israel. Initially, when Hashem told Moshe that he should take the Jewish people to the land of Israel, obviously, who was going to be leading Moshe, but who was going to be there in a revealed way? Hashem. Hashem would be there constantly in a revealed way where the Jewish people would feel his presence, and obviously they would be filled with incredible sense of security that Hashem is there with them, accompanying them through all of their challenges, through all of their wars. Here, after the Chet HaEgel, what does Hashem say? I'm not going to go anymore. Rather, my angel will go before you. I'm sending a representative. It's not me personally. It's only me through a malach. And it's interesting because here it's quite sad. And in life, we do feel that sometimes. Sometimes we feel things, so to speak, it's like almost like it evolves. You know, it's like this evolving downward spiral where a person can make a mistake, a person can do something wrong, they feel a little bit, sometimes because they feel a little bit disconnected. Once they do one thing wrong, they feel more disconnected, then more disconnected. And then what happens is you feel almost like Hashem is really quite far, in a sense. And you don't feel his presence there with you, and you don't feel that sense of security. So this is almost what Hashem is saying to Moshe here. He's saying, it's not me that's going to go directly. I'm only going to send a malach in front of them. Now, interestingly, I just want to share with you that Moshe doesn't pick up on this here. You would think that Moshe would scream, say, no, don't, please, Hashem, just come, don't even think of this. We need you, not a malach, not a representative. And yet Moshe doesn't. And the Mefarshim tell us the reason that Moshe doesn't plead immediately is, and this is also a very powerful lesson just in general, is that Moshe still feels that Hashem is still a little bit upset with the Jewish people. He hasn't forgiven them completely. There's still that anger there. He's appeased, but not totally appeased. And we know it says in Pirkei Avos that if we want to plead on behalf of somebody, the best time to do it is not when somebody is in a state of anger. That's the time that we plead as little as possible, just the minimum, the bare minimum, and then we leave it until the person cools down a lot and they feel warm towards you, and then you start to plead your case more. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu is going to do, because we'll see later he does pick up on this, and he asks Hashem not to send a malach, but rather to come himself, but he doesn't do it here because he doesn't feel that this is the right time yet. Okay, so that's what happens here. So I just want to see, there was a few other important commentaries. So let's just see quickly, actually, Rashi. Rashi says, this is actually Rashi on, so my malach, he says, but not I, you see, it's my malach, the loyani, and not me. And what is ubiyoim pakti? So this is the famous thing we did mention last time, that this is unfortunate thing that happens with the Chet HaEgel, that although Hashem says, I'm not going to destroy the Jewish people, and he doesn't even punish them in a terrible way, so to speak, nevertheless, this sin dampens almost the whole history of the Jewish people. And he says, Ata shamati elecha, so I have listened to you, Hashem says, I will not destroy them all at once, but v'tamid tamid, but every time, so constantly, whenever I remember, whenever I have to pay attention to anything that they do wrong, I will unfortunately visit upon them a little bit of this sin, im shar havainis, with their sins that they do at that time. Vein puranos baal Yisrael. And the famous line that the Medrash tells, actually says in the Gemara, that there is no punishment that comes upon the Jewish people, she'ein bo k'tzas me'pirain aven ha'egel, that doesn't have a little bit of the egel with it. And that's even up until now. And the Ramban says it very, very strongly. The language of the Ramban is, he says, v'zeremez mimena la'eis ha'golos. This is actually a hint, because he uses the future tense, to the time of exile, to the time we're in now. Right, that there's no sin and there's no punishment that doesn't have a little bit something of the sin of the egel. And this is what we are experiencing, unfortunately, now in our time. time, even up until today, we unfortunately suffering still from the chait of the egel. But it's always only at a time when Hashem is anyways punishing. And I know we said this last time, that famous mashal where the king needed to, where the king got upset and he said, I'm going to throw this big rock. And he didn't know what to do because he didn't want to do it afterwards when he calmed down a little bit. So the advisor says, I have a good idea. Just break the rock into a lot of little pebbles. And then any time that the prince does something small wrong, throw a small pebble at him. A small pebble will only do very slight damage. It will only make him uncomfortable, but it obviously won't kill him like the big rock. And that's what's constantly happening with us. Just want to see, because the Mefarshim continue a little bit actually and develop this a little more in a very beautiful way. And what does this mean? Because we're not just talking about the concept of the punishment. When we say that Hashem visits upon us the sin of the egel, what does it mean? So I'll just show you firstly what the Sfarnu says. The Sfarnu says very beautifully, Ki me'achar sheshanu ba'ilosam he'muchzokim la'hoisif la'ashma ba. Unfortunately, once we make a mistake, and we know this in life, once you do something wrong, whether in even the smallest thing, you get angry, you use a language that you've never used before, whatever it may be that you engage in, once you do it once, unfortunately, it doesn't have that same shock the next time. And after a while, like after the first time, the second time, the third time, it becomes almost permissible to you. You don't even feel like you're doing anything wrong. And that's why it says over here, it doesn't mean the punishment. It means any time that we make a mistake, the truth is, what gives us that ability to make that mistake? It's because we made this mistake at the beginning. When you make this mistake of sinning with the egel, that gives a little bit of, unfortunately, some, if you want to say, a little bit of impetus, a little bit of energy, which allows you to do other mistakes. And that's why it actually does make sense, if you want to say, that the punishment is also visited each time, because the cause of the sin is the chait ha'egel as well. I just want to show you another beautiful thing. Time really goes very, very quickly, but there's a very beautiful Malbim here that he explains so magnificently this idea. He says a very beautiful thought. He says like this, and I try to do this properly. The Malbim explains that it's true that they made a mistake here, right? They did this terrible chait ha'egel, they made the calf, and they had just seen Hashem, and how could they have done it? But the truth is, we explained already at the beginning that a little bit this was a setup, right? Because it's almost impossible to understand how a people who have just seen Hashem so visibly in such a revealed way and experienced such great miracles would stoop so low as to make the golden calf. So we explained it was a little bit of a setup, and Hashem did it in order to teach us later on through the generations that every single time that a person sins, they should know that they could be forgiven, just like the Jewish people who sinned at the Chait HaEgel, and then they did Shuvah, and they were forgiven. So the Malbim says, what really was happening here? It says a very interesting thing, that when the Jewish people went through the experience of Matan Torah, of receiving the Torah, what happened to them then? One of the big things that happened was, as we say, physically they were cured. Everybody was cured. Everybody was 100% well. But even deeper than that, spiritually we were cured. What does that mean? Just like initially when Adam HaRishon was created, his Yetzer Hara, his evil inclination, was not inside of him. The same way the Jewish people, it's like the evil inclination was almost removed from them, and the angel of death was almost removed, right? The world was lifted to the most incredibly pure state, and every individual was lifted to such a pure state. But there's a little bit of a problem with that, because the purpose, as we know, of a man, of a human being, is not the purpose of an angel. In other words, we're not meant to be angels. Angels are pure. Angels listen to what Hashem says because they don't have a Yetzirah. So therefore, they're like robots. They're like computers, you know, they do what, I wish, like the computer sometimes does what you tell it to do. But they're like robots. They have no mind of their own. But that's not what we're meant to be. We're meant to be people who choose between right and wrong. How does free choice work? Well, we have to have a Yetzirah in order for it to be that we have free choice, right? So we have to be pulled sometimes in the negative way. And we have to have the Yetzirah, which tells us, no, be pulled in the right way, pulled in both directions. And then we choose which way we will go. So the Malbim explains that this Chayta Egel was actually something that was meant to happen, as we said, because we have to reintroduce the Yetzirah into us. We have to internalize, unfortunately, the evil inclination again, and therefore give us back this concept of free choice. But there's one but. The Malbim says, when is it worthwhile? When is it worthwhile, this whole idea that Hashem makes us into people who have free choice? When we choose freely, but we choose correctly. So therefore, B'yoyim Pakti Pakarti says, every single time that we do something wrong, the Malbim explains very beautifully, that's a problem. Because at that point, what we are doing is we are not fulfilling the purpose of the Egel. Because the purpose of the Egel is that we have the free choice, but we choose correctly. So when we don't choose correctly, well, we are messing up the whole plan. And therefore, that's a time that we need, deserve, so to speak, in a sense, to be punished. And then hopefully jolt us to remember, why do we have the Yetzirah? So we shouldn't listen to him. That's the only reason he's there. So that we should say no to him. And interestingly enough, the knowledge, the acknowledgement that the Yetzirah is there just to set us up and to make it difficult, that in itself gives us strength to overpower him. You know, there's a very beautiful mashal that's actually brought in the Zohar that the Tanya brings, that it's a very powerful mashal where a king has a son who's a very, very good, you know, he's a prince and he's a very good boy, so to speak, but he wants to test him. So what does he do? He pays a prostitute to actually try and entice his son. And what happens is that the king pays good money, and she obviously will do her job as best as she can. But we know, when we look back, if we're outsiders watching what's happening with all the different players, the king and the prostitute both don't want the son to make the mistake. They both want the son to overcome and to be strong and to withstand any temptation. The same way, if we realize that even our Yetzirah, what does he really want? He really wants that we shouldn't listen to him. That gives us strength to overcome that Yetzirah. And this is part of this idea that we have to realize that every time that we make a mistake, we should remember the Chayta Egel. And that should give us the strength to say, oh, this is really a little bit of a setup. And I have it within me because Hashem has given me the strength to overcome this challenge. I don't have to give in. I don't have to make the mistake. Okay, I just want to go a little bit further, and I feel bad. We're definitely not going to finish today what I wanted to, but next week we'll go into more depth about this. But just a few more beautiful mefarshim on the words that we say, Hine malach yelech, that it says that Hashem said, I will send, if what the word is, behold, my angel will go before you. Yelech, will walk before you. So the Einet Dover says a very interesting thing. This actually is quite a negative language, in the sense where when there's two ways of saying something can go before you. Either Hashem could have said, I will send my malach, eshlach, right? I will send. He doesn't say that here. Here he says, yelech, go. What's the difference? If it says send means he's a messenger from Hashem. A messenger, as we know, is almost like the one who is sending him, which would be a lot nicer. It would mean that the malach is being specifically sent with a mission of honor to accompany the Jewish people into the land of Israel. But here it's very negative. He will just happen to go before you. So it's not even like he's directly my messenger. He's just walking and he'll happen to walk before you. Again, showing that the supervision and that sense of security for the Jewish people will not be so strong. Because why? Because this is a big mistake that they made. In other words, according to Hashem, they don't deserve, or it's not only a matter of deserving, they're not worthy, in a sense, of the presence of Hashem amongst them just because of their state of being. And I just want to show you one Let's see if we could finish. We have, I think it's only one more pasuk here. Pasuk Lamed Hey. Yes, I just want to show you something beautiful because it ends off with a very strong language over here. It says, Vayigaf Hashem Esa'am. And Hashem struck the people. Asher Asu Es Ha'egel, who made the eagle. Right, this last pasuk Lamed Hey. Asher Asa Aharon, that Aaron made. Right, this is such a, it's a, this is the end of this chapter. Very strong language here. Quite negative almost. You think, what? Why are we highlighting the calf that Aaron made? Almost again implicating Aaron at the end of the whole thing with the sin. And yet, it depends how you read the pasuk. It says, Hashem struck the people with a plague because they had made the calf that Aaron made. You have to read it correctly. It looks like Aaron made the calf, but who really made the calf? The people made the calf. And that's why they're going to die with the plague. These people that are the ones who are truly guilty, not Aaron. He only was the external. He just threw in that piece of paper and out came the calf. He was only acting, so to speak, as their messenger by no choice. But really who made it? It was the people. The people, and they were struck by a plague. What is this plague? So this is an interesting discussion that it says. I'm sorry, I feel bad we're going to end in a basic point. But it's actually, if you look at this chapter and you analyze, you see that they're sort of punished in three ways. One way was, as we said, when Moshe Rabbeinu burned the calf and he gave them to drink from the ashes of the calf. And that was actually interesting. Those people, Moshe Rabbeinu gave, those were the people who didn't have, there were no witnesses and there was no warning. No witness, no warning, so they drank, and only Hashem could testify. If you sinned, you would die, and if you didn't sin, you didn't die. Then there were the Bnei Levi who actually killed, and there it says the number of people who died, 3,000. And why does it say the number over there? Because it was actually, it's actually showing how great the Bnei Levi are, that they did this. Those people were the ones who actually sinned, both with warning and with witnesses. And then we have a third method of death, and this is the Magefa, the plague that they had. And it doesn't tell us too much detail, but there was a bit of a plague which Moshe Rabbeinu stops. And these people are the ones who had witnesses but didn't have warning. So if they weren't warned, but there were witnesses, they actually fell victim to the plague and they died here. And it doesn't say the number at all because Hashem doesn't want to emphasize too much, but he just mentions that there is this concept that there are these people that actually did die this way. Okay, so that's what Rashi concludes. Time is up, and Emirtz Hashem, I just want to say, I think that's all. Okay. I just want, you know, we have just 2 minutes. I just want to show you. Let me see something. Okay. I want to just read you the Or HaChaim very quickly, just to end off, as we say, Asher Osu Aaron, that sounds so negative, that Aaron made. So it's just what we said. He says, V'ulai shehikpir Hashem, maybe Hashem is upset with Aaron, al shegar garmu la'aren kadosh Hashem l'cheit l'chata ki cheit adam gadol lo yiyeh k'chut ha'saira yakpir Hashem olav ma'oid. So either Hashem is upset because they caused Aaron to do this sin, even though it was only a small sin that Aaron did, because he's just acting as their agent, but nevertheless, because of who he is, he's held to quite a high standard, and Hashem is actually expressing his upsetness, so to speak, with the Jewish people almost, that they put Aaron in this terrible position. That's one thing. The other thing that the Or HaChaim says, Ayirtze lahaitzi halaz me'al Aaron, he wants to actually remove the entire blame from Aaron. Ki Yisrael heim she'asu ha'egel, it's the Jewish people who made the egel, asher osa Aaron, which Aaron, so to speak, did. It really wasn't Aaron. Ki ma'ise Aaron aleihem yechshav, because the action that Aaron did really is upon them. They are held responsible. He just did the external action. Either because they forced him or because they did the main action, which was all the magic that they did, and that's what came out. So that's how you read it, that it's not Aaron, obviously. It's rather Aaron only plays a very, very small external part, and Hashem holds the other people responsible. Okay, I just want to, let me see if I can hide the sharing and then I'll unmute you. Okay. Okay, so if there are any questions,